So we need to make sure we've got the right human being by the lovely pool here at the Phoenix Hotel. This is not a better way to do an interview if you tried. It's really, really tough. We're having a tough time out here. So would you identify yourself, please?
My name's Paul. Paul Garrett. I play drums in the Kooks.
How about that? Okay, which of the band members was the one obsessed by Hunky Dory?
That's, it was Luke. It was between, well, all of us really, but Luke was the one who came up with the idea of the name the Kooks, based on the song Kooks by David Bowie. But we're all huge Bowie fans. I think there's a big sort of, you know, he's crossed over so many genres in a band who, you know, all four of us originally were going on all completely different directions. It was a very much a focal point for us.
And you were signed by Virgin, I guess Astral works here, but you played four songs at something called, I love the name of the place, the Brighton Free Butt.
Yeah, the Free Butt.
The Free Butt, yeah, there you go. Which over here, you know, I mean, hey, we're all into that, but...
that's what they call like a keg over there, a keg of beer, Free Butt or something. But yeah, no, that was our first ever gig. We played literally four songs. I'm just trying to think, one of them was Sofa Song, which is on the album. But it all started there. We literally didn't have any other songs and we just wanted to gig so badly. And we did a demo about a week after, which is the way we actually got signed.
Did they ask if you had any other songs at the time?
No.
Four songs. They signed you on four stinking songs.
They pretty much signed us on one, which was Sofa Song.
In the view. Brave.
In the view to having, you know, more songs. And we you know, we basically were like, we convinced them that, you know, we weren't just a one song band. And,
you guys are good at PR, aren't you?
I guess we have the gift of the gab.
I guess you do, while we're talking here. Your first tour was with The Thrill, so I actually interviewed on their very first US tour, too. Now, this is kind of a cautionary tale, because their first record was a smash, their second one, not so much. Yeah. Now they're in the process of recording their third album. Now, you've already had quite a few singles from the first album in the UK.
Yeah.
Are people over there already asking for the second album?
You know what, I mean, we're on our sixth single over there. And it's, you know, for any band, it was always our idea to be a band who not only have, I mean, from our point of view, a good album, but, you know, have the singles to back it up. I mean, that's like, you get a lot of people who are great album bands or great singles bands, but it's all about, for us, trying to mix the two together and, you know. I was just thinking, what was the rest of the question? Sorry.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Well, no, I was saying, are people asking for the second album?
Oh, that was it. You know what? I mean, because we're pretty prolific in writing. We all write songs, and we've got loads of ideas, and we stick them in the middle, and see what happens with them. And I think we need to give people a bit of a break, you know, and then. Get back in the zone. But I mean, that doesn't mean we stop working, because we'll be going absolutely everywhere else, you know. And
right.
That's, but we were definitely in the development of the next set, well, of the next record.
I read you are, quote, a groove rock and roll band that wants to make people dance. But I mean, your songs are kind of timeless.
Wow. I don't really know what to say there. I mean, but that is what the intention was. It was originally, especially in Brighton, where a lot of bands were playing this sort of melodic but very downbeat, melancholic style music. We were like one of a few bands, I guess, who were like, you know, I want to see people dance. I want to see people come out the gig and go, you know what I mean, and just have a good time. And it kind of like at that point, at that climb, it was a bit, you know, it's a little bit like you come out a gig and you kind of feel like you killed somebody. Do you know what I mean?
You got yourself a pretty famous producer in Tony Hoffer. Now, tell me a little bit about working with him, because the producer thing you hear all, you know. So number one, was he your choice? Did Virgin come up with him, or did you go after him based on the great people he worked with?
It was a bit of both. He worked on the Thrills record, and the Thrills were guys who you know, that they above all convinced us in the end. Because I mean, we were convinced to go with Virgin anyway, but Connor, the lead singer, pulled us aside and just said, "You're making the right decision." You know what I mean? So we had a lot of faith and respect in them as a band, you know, just from a personal point of view. And they had Tony Hoffer on their first record, and we heard what they did with, you know, with I saw what he did with them, and I think we were all like, oh, that's really cool. And then we realised he'd been with Beck and Supergrass, and I mean, there's so many bands in the pot that he's done stuff with, and he's so eclectic, you know. And with that, with us, we're quite eclectic too, and it was like a match made in heaven, really. And you know, our A&R guy Nick, he just sorted it all out, and it was just like, I'm so glad it, you know, worked out, because Tony is a, he bought our sound very, very much. You know, he brought it in a bit. You know, we were, as I say, four individuals who were really stubborn, pulling in different directions, and that's kind of what was cool about us. But at the same time, I think when you do a record, you need to just bring it in a bit and just focus a little bit more. And we've got an eclectic album that we're really proud of, and it's not too, you know, every song's not like completely.
Well, here's a, ready for the segue? You open the album with the rather quiet Seaside, but then you slam it to See the World, and it continues to be sequenced that way. It kind of does go back and forth a little bit. Yeah, there's more folky tunes, and then you slam, and then there's a couple of slams in a row, but the sequencing of the record is pretty damn smart, because it really doesn't allow somebody to say, well, this band sounds like...
Yeah, sure. I mean,
so was that intentional? Did you guys do that in the studio with him in terms of that?
You know what, it wasn't. It was one of those things. I think in with albums in general, I don't think you can have a preconceived notion about what's going to happen. I think you lay down your stuff, you know, and then work it out from there. And I mean, I think what happened is that we recorded it all and written it, recorded it, and we're like, cool. And then I think our A&R guy just put, he said, I've just put an order together. Yeah, you know what I mean, just I think played all the songs, and that order was the one which is now the album. And because we couldn't think of swapping any of them for anything else, if you know what I mean, like putting Matchbox earlier in the album or putting Seaside near the back, we just fell in love with that running order, and we couldn't think of anything wrong with it. And I think it, you know, as you say, I think it's quite even in you know, having a heavy one and stuff, you know. I think it would be terrible if we'd done like all the softer tunes at the start or something, and then all the, and it just wouldn't work. I think it's in, you know.
No, it mixed as well. Now, for all intents and purposes, these are out and out love songs.
Yep.
So let's talk about them, starting with Ula, which was released in the UK this week.
Yep.
Is the girl real? Did she wear a petticoat and go to Hollywood and pay the price?
Do you know what? Luke wrote that song, and it was very much just a song of, I think he writes in a way that, you know, he can sometimes write about something really personal, and then sometimes he can just write about something that's, you know, he had a dream one day and that's what happened, you know, and he gets influenced by that. And I just think it's a song with a little moral in there, do you know what I mean? And that she's not real though. This girl's not real.
Are any of the girls real?
Some of them are, yeah.
But we'll leave them alone to protect the non-innocent.
Of course.
Just on Prince, they don't really exist, they just sort of exist. So when someone listening to the record gets to Time Awaits, they're probably expecting a blues song from the opening, but then it gets into a reggae rock and roll combo that kind of takes it home in an entirely different way.
Yep.
So this is a good time to ask about how the band does go about writing their songs.
It's very much, as I say, we all write songs. Someone puts an idea in the pot, and then either we'll develop it, we'll take it completely apart, completely change it, but we'll use the same sort of, you know, the main idea as a sort of, you know, idea to sort of progress the, I don't know, the music. I mean, it's so sort of like being in a band, it's so hard to talk about your own music. I mean, because I don't know how any other band does it, you know. But what I do know is that we're very thorough, and I think the main thing is that the melody and the song comes through no matter what. I mean, if you know, you don't want to take away from that. I think sometimes you can afford to be technical, do you know what I mean? And you can afford to be, have that mild bit of muso in you just to sort of push it and then bring it back. And but you know, as long as the song comes through, you know, it doesn't matter with us.
I saw you gave away a platinum disc a while back, so the album is platinum in the UK, is that true?
It's triple, and it's nearly quadruple.
Oh my goodness. So now it's time to conquer this place that we're sitting in here.
It would be great.
good old America. So this is your first tour here, if I'm right, and a short one, just to, if you'll excuse the expression, test the waters, then I imagine you'll be back for a much bigger one.
I very much hope so. I mean, that's the plan, to definitely... When we started this band, it was never to just play in one country, do you know what I mean? And then I think it was to try and play to as many people and get as many people dancing as possible, you know, and having a good time. And I think, you know, with our band, I think in time, you know, it will be like that. People come, I mean, in England, people come to our gigs to, you know, have a beer, have a dance, you know, maybe meet some like-minded people, and, you know, and everyone comes out with a smile on their face.
Now, we have the album now, finally, yeah. And we have a lot of singles to catch up on. So do you find it strange that the entire world doesn't get to hear the music at the same time?
It's a funny one, that. I mean, because I always remember, like back home in England, you'd see a band and they were promoting their album and then they'd just disappear, you know? And you'd be like, where are they gone? Because you just totally don't realise that they're actually travelling all the rest of the world. You kind of think they've just disappeared completely. And then they come back like later and you're like, you know, they've all looked a bit weathered and maybe a little bit older. And you're like, God, you know, haven't seen them in 6 months. And then you just don't realise how big the world is, you know? And I don't think any band in the world could ever cover the whole of the world, you know, that much. Even the biggest band in the world. There's so many...
Even the Beatles stuff was not released here at exactly the same time as it was in England.
No, that's true. That's true. I mean, I don't know enough about some of the older stuff. But yeah, the thing is with the Beatles, they are the complete template for any pop band. Because, I mean, like for us, when I think about it, you know, we're eclectic like the Beatles. It's all about the songs, you know?
A triple platinum isn't like a gold record, 300,000 in England, so you've sold a million units.
No, platinum's 300,000.
Yeah, so you've sold almost a million records, which is pretty, which is a lot, because, you know, they talk about platinum in England, and we over here say, well, that's, you know, 300,000 records, but you've sold a million records.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I hope you got a good royalty deal.
I tell you what, you know, it's just, when it got, the day it got released in England, I was feeling pretty sick. Just sick to the stomach of, like, you know, how's this going to do? It's like having a baby, I guess, and watching it grow up and then letting it go out of your house, you know what I mean? It's like that. And, I said on the day, I said, if we do 20,000 copies, any more than that, I'll be the happiest man in the world. And, like, a month later, it was doing 60, and we were like, oh, that's probably going to hit its peak. And then something happened. I don't know what it was, but, you know, like, 8 months down the line, it hit a million and nearly gone quadruple. And I can't even believe I'm saying this at the moment. Do you know what I mean?
That's pretty phenomenal. So, from one of your mates who is not here with us, but I want to get into this because I think it's important.
Yeah.
And it's his quote. Max's quote is: "As if everyone's lost the art of songwriting and gained the art of bullshitting, which has become more important.
Yeah.
Some have a big hairdo and a snazzy dress sense to look the part. That seems to be more important than what it is, you know, with the songs.
Yeah.
So was that a reaction to any band in particular? And you don't have to name names, or just a feeling that the art of songwriting is lost in a lot of the music today?
I think Max is a very passionate guy. I mean, and you know, we all are. But I think there, you know, as I was saying about there's always a reaction in music, and that's the way the music scene always keeps on evolving, and the best bands who still exist write the best tunes. That's usually the way it is, or, you know, should be. And I think there are a lot of bands out there who aren't genuine, you know?
And yet you're playing tonight on an NME night, so how many times have they called you the biggest and best band in the world?
I don't think they ever have done, actually.
They did publish the Johnny Burrell quote, but...
I was going to say, we're pretty damn happy that they, you know, I mean, they give us a hell of a lot of support, but they don't put us in that bracket.
Thank goodness, right?
Yeah, because it's
not... That's death.
It's not what we're about, man. Right. We never have been about that. We're totally not, you know, I mean, it's all about the music. It always has been, and it's always all about playing live shows and getting people up and dancing and having a good time and all the other bullshit that goes with it. We're not about that at all. At all.
I know it's kind of scary when you're normal, isn't it?
This is it, man. I mean, like, I was at a gig yesterday or something, and I'm suffering from a bit of jet lag, you know.
Sure.
And everyone always tries, you know, after a show, is like, oh, come on, come out with us. And the moment you say, well, I'm kind of tired, you know, they're like, whoa.
Excuse me, are you in rock and roll? What's wrong with you?
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I don't mind being normal.
It's kind of scary. I wouldn't know. Were your parents big music fans? Because, look, I'm not going to say kids, but people your age don't just tend to pick up the music that you guys listen to at a very young age. So how did that all get into your heads?
I mean, like, yeah, parents' collections is dead important. And I was very lucky to have, my dad was very into sort of like, I don't know if you know, ABC.
Oh, yeah.
ABC Lexicon of Love. Yes. And then the Dire Straits. What else was he into? God, he was into like Supertramp. All this sort of like more intricate stuff, Fleetwood Mac, you know. David.
So I became a drummer, huh?
Well, you know what? I don't know why I became a drummer. I think when I was three, I wanted a guitar. And I had the guitar, I looked at it, and it just didn't appeal to me. So I started banging on it, you know, at the age of three, and pots and pans come out. And before you know it, you know, you're more interested in banging on things, you know. But I think, I mean, what I was going to say with my dad's music collection, Bowie was a big influence with him. But my mum was complete opposite. She was, like, into Hendrix. I mean, Elvis Costello and the Attractions, the Ian Dury and the Blockheads, you know, the Pretenders. My dad was a big Blondie fan as well. And I just think with my dad's sort of more 80s, sort of 70s, 80s, new wave kind of stuff, and my mum sort of like the new wave, but more about the 70s rock and roll, with Free and all these people, you know, the Stones and stuff. I think it was quite nice to kind of discover all these great bands, you know, and they're two completely different styles.
That's how I got into this, my parents, same thing. So one of the visuals on the website I saw is like part of the single of the original Like a Rolling Stone. So the site is like, it's really like complete. It's a good site, it's not a BS site, it's a real site. So do you guys get involved in it to any great extent? I can't imagine you don't.
I mean, we try and get involved as much as possible. We've got a friend, Bobble, who keeps tabs on it as much as possible, and he's like, he's on the road with us all the time and stuff. I mean, it's hard when you're on the road because you haven't always got a computer handy and stuff. So to relay all the stuff to him, and it, you know that he's gonna put it out properly, you know, and he's very hands on with the forum and stuff. It's dead important, man, to keep on
top. This day and age, yeah.
Well, I just think in general, I mean, like, it's kind of like the new fanzine, do you know what I mean?
Recently, the band recently recorded a track for Save the Children.
Yep.
So it's cool that you're using your popularity to help out.
Well, it's a bit of a sore subject with like that. I mean, we were talking, me and Luke were talking to a radio station about the whole Live 8 thing and what a farce that was. Because you got all these acts who, well, 9 out of 10 of them, I'm sure, were just trying to fucking sell their own, you know.
They don't care about helping the farmers.
Yeah.
I very much doubt. I think they're more worried about selling more records, and I think it's disgusting. I think, and the reason why we did Save the Children is that we genuinely believe in that cause, and we wanna help as much as possible, and we're in a position where, if we can, you know, contribute to something so important, then so be it. Do you know what I mean? And if there's any little difference that we can make, and if that makes a difference to a kid, you know, who's in the war zone, and gives that kid some education, you know, I think it's really important, man. Do you know what I mean? Because there's a lot of shit going on in the world. Yeah, I mean, all I can say is we're very genuine about this.
The last thing that we like to do to fill out the hour is we do a thing called a musical sandwich, You are going to have a ball with this. So it's two of your songs as the bread, And then as many pieces of music as you want in between by other bands.
So the two bits for bread, of ours, yeah, would be Matchbox, and I guess, let's go for She Moves in Her Own Way. The songs in between, how many have I got?
A lot.
A hell of a lot. Okay.
Start
off with Dreams by Fleetwood Mac. I mean, you know, I prefer the 70s stuff to the overproduced 80s stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm sure he would admit that, you know, I mean, like, as so many other bands have done, Queen, for instance, were like, God, I kind of wish we didn't go for that 80s sound, you know? All these drum triggers and all this kind of synths and, you know, I mean. But yeah, no, I think Dreams, definitely. I mean, it's a big favourite of all of ours. Then I'd go for Bring On The Night by The Police.
Nice.
I'd go for Down To The Waterline by Dire Straits. God, I'll tell you what, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll by Ian Dury and the Blockheads.
Can't go wrong with that.
I always thought, I mean, that we've got a friends band, and they like very sort of eclectic, but very like, I mean, there's a dad in the band, they're called the Mystery Jets, and there's like a...
Them.
Oh, you played them, yeah, there's a dad in the band, and they're
absolutely.
They're very crazy. You should, if you've got one of the songs, put on You Can't Fool Me Dennis, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Mystery Jets, man, they remind me of Ian Dury and the Blockheads, mm-hmm. They're so scatty, you know?
Yeah.
But then I'd play Elvis Costello and the Attractions, and which one should I go for? it's hard, man, but it's got to be probably, I don't want to go to Chelsea. Then maybe we should take it down a notch, maybe some Bob Dylan, Hurricane, if you got enough time. Neil Young, Heart of Gold. I'm going to be really, really random, completely, completely random, and go for Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses.